Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. This is episode 8 of the Rose Quinn podcast, and today I'm going to be chatting about love triangles, but first I want to tell you about my favorite book of the episode, which is Furyborn by Claire LeGrand. I got my hands on Furyborn through NetGalley, which is a site where book reviewers and book bloggers can request ARCs of books. They're digital, so you read them on your phone, which is really nice for me, which makes it so easy. But I was lucky enough to get chosen to read Furyborn, and it doesn't come out until May 22nd of this year. But you guys, it was so amazing. It is a YA fantasy novel about two fated prophesied queens, one of sun who has the power to save the world, and one of blood who has the power to destroy the world. So, going hand in hand with that, the two main characters are Riel and Eliana, and there are 1,000 years between the two. So Riel's timeline is 1,000 years before Eliana's, and Riel happens to control all 7 elements, which only one of these prophesied queens can do. So she has to go through 7 trials, each element, to prove that she's the sun queen to her people. But it's not just like a show and tell, like these are life and death trials that she has to go through. So her life is on the line. Like she has to prove that she's the sun queen, because if she's not, then she's the blood queen and her people will kill her. And in Eliana's timeline, the things are a little bit different. Queen Riel is a fairy tale, and Eliana is a bounty hunter. And her kingdom was conquered, and so she's a bounty hunter, so she does a lot of things that aren't technically above board to keep her family safe. And then women in her city start to go missing, one of them is her mother eventually. So she joins this rebel captain to try and go find her, and she finds a lot more evil in this kingdom than she thought possible. It took me a minute when I started reading the book to really figure out the timelines and who everybody was and when and what was going on. But once I figured that out, I was completely hooked. I loved both main characters. They are both so strong, and they are forced into a role, you know, that a teenage girl wouldn't necessarily be in. But I really love how Riel is a powerful being, and she knows she's powerful, and she really wants to prove that she has everything under control and that she is this sun god. And I think what's so great is that she's a character that doesn't apologize for her emotions. She's got a lot of power. She has a little bit of an anger from something that happened in her past. And you see this kind of weigh her down. She's upset about it, but she never apologizes for the anger that she has or how that motivates her through these trials. And I really liked that about her. She's unapologetically herself, and she's real. Because people are angry, people have problems, and I think sometimes we get caught up in thinking we're not allowed to feel that way, and I think Riel is a really good example of that's okay. But basically, what I'm trying to tell you is that this book is amazing, there's a great love story, and has some really great scenes, and it's really well done, well written. It was one of those books that I got lost in the book instead of worrying or overthinking the craft of it, you know, trying to review it. I just ended up thinking about it as a reader, which is my favorite book experience. So make sure that you put it on your to-read list. It comes out May 22nd, 2018. Furyborn by Claire LeGrand. So since it's Valentine's Day, we're going to talk about love triangles. Now, I hope that you guys are all enjoying your Valentine's Day and that you have fun plans with yourself or with your partner, whoever. I personally am going to treat myself to something because I've been single, you know, for like the last year, and it's been the best year of my life, and I'm okay with that for sure. So I'm going to pick up a nice book, maybe go see a movie. It's going to be a wonderful day. But I have been thinking a lot about love triangles. I've been watching The Vampire Diaries, so of course, I've been thinking about love triangles because the three of them. But I also read, I got to read beta read for Shannon Murphy, who's actually the guest on our episode today also, so that's fun. But she had a really great love triangle, I think really well done in her, she has one in her story, and I have one in my novel, This Dead World. And so I just kind of thought it fitting, and I wanted to go and just, you know, look and see, kind of put some thoughts down as to maybe what's overdone in the love triangle world and, you know, what you can do to really make that love triangle stronger. So what I thought was interesting, when you think of a love triangle, what do you think of? One hot girl plus one hot boy and another hot boy, right? I mean, Twilight, Hunger Games, all of them are hot girl, two hot guys vying for her attention. But how about you mix it up? Make it one hot girl and another hot girl and hot boy. Or, you know, hot boy, hot girl. Wait, that was the first one I said. But, you know, like, hot boy is the center. He likes a hot boy and a hot girl. There we go. Or, you know, make it competition for friend love. Or, you know, instead of the main character choosing between two love interests, what if the two love interests are, you know, competing for that main character's affection. Like, it's on them, it's not on the main character. Just something that makes it a little bit different, not something we've seen over and over and over again. Because I think I personally love a good love triangle, and I love having it. Let's count. Let's see if you can count how many times I say love in this episode, because I bet it'll be a ton. But I'm all for a romantic subplot. I think that it can really strengthen a story if it's done right. But I also think it can really take away from a story if it's not done right. Another thing that I think we see too much of is one hot, amazing, nice, perfect for the girl guy, and the other guy is this hot but really bad, you know, mysterious, rebellious guy. I personally think that we should bring both guys into reality. While I think, yes, there are good guys who are sweet and kind, but they aren't perfect. They don't always have all good qualities. They're human beings. I think it's important to give both of the romantic interests flaws. They should definitely both have value. They should both have something good about them, because we don't want both of them to have terrible things about them or to just be terrible people, because then what does that say about your main character that she's choosing between two terrible people? But I think they should both have values and they should both be flawed, because they're human beings. They're not perfect. We want to make sure, or you want to make sure, that your main character isn't choosing between a perfect cookie cutter love interest and like a leather sporting bad guy, because in that scenario we all know she's gonna choose the bad guy and then realize that the good guy is who she really wanted. Just give us more than that. Make it a little bit more interesting. If both of the guys are kind of equal, on like on the same level, both have some good, both have some bad, you know, then it makes it more interesting as to who she's gonna choose. Someone on Twitter responded to me. I posed this question, you know, what are you sick of seeing in love triangles? And he responded with something really great. Let's see, where did it go? Oh, Adam. I'm sorry, Adam, I don't know how to say your last name. Gulamete. His handle's at AGULLEMETTE87. Gulamete? I think so. He was talking about that love triangle when it's, you know, a girl and two guys. And he said, I hate when the woman favors the one guy, knows the second guy has feelings for her, but still goes to him for all the advice and support. I hate it because I've yet to read the exception where the woman ultimately chooses the friend zone guy, which I think is so, so, so accurate. I think we all know I think we've all been and can relate to that friend zone space, and that's a terrible place to be in. But if your main character knows that, you know, one of her love interests is interested in her romantically, and then she continues to take advantage of him by asking him for advice on the other love interest, that makes your main character look super mean and terrible, and we wouldn't like her.
So this next thing I thought about, because my novel, This Dead World, is a dystopian novel, and I think it's a very frequent sub plot in dystopian novels to have a love triangle. I think it's important to think realistically about your novel
and the setting of your story with the love triangle. So, like, in my novel, This Dead World, it's the zombie apocalypse happened 10 years ago, but, like, there's still zombies all over the world. So would you really be thinking about, you know, kissing your love interest, or would you be worried about running for your life? Does that make sense? Like I think you have to look at each scene, but if, you know, your main character and one of her love interests are like, okay, here's the good example. This is what I thought of. The Hunger Games series does this really well because that's a dystopian world, but there's still a love triangle. But the focus isn't only on the love triangle when they are running. Like, so when they're in the arena, Peeta and Katniss don't drop down into the arena and then look at each other and be like, oh my gosh, I want to kiss you so much. No, they're running for their lives because they might die. So it's like you have to look at the scene and the stakes of what's going on. If Peeta and Katniss were like, oh my gosh, I love you, as soon as they dropped into the arena, that would make them both really stupid. But when they do get into the cave and Peeta's injured, that makes more sense that they have more of a romantic moment between the two of them and they get closer. You know, it fits that scene more because there isn't an immediate threat of death right next to them. While, yes, there's still someone out there trying to get them, not in that exact moment when they're hiding in the cave.
The last thing that I feel like we see
so much of is just, like, straight up nacho cheese, which might sound weird, but please, please cool it on the cheese. I'm not going to name this series, but maybe you know what I'm talking about. But I think this, what I'm about to say, we see a lot in books. But I love love. Let me just disclaimer. Like, I love love. It's my favorite thing ever. But I remember reading this, like, urban fantasy type book, and it had some magic in it, which I always think is great. And so I picked it up, was super excited. But I'm now, I haven't read this book in, like, probably 8 years. But I remember this so vividly because it irritated me, because it was like insta-love. The main character and his love interest fall in love right away. They are teenagers, so I will give them that. But they, like, can't breathe without each other. They shorten each other's names to just the first letter, which bothers me so much because I've never seen anybody do that in real life. Never. And especially with these names, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. It's like one syllable shorter and doesn't sound good. But I mean, I remember what it was like to be a teenager and to fall in love and to just feel like your life was, you know, gonna end if you didn't see them right away. But there's a fine line between teenager puppy love and teenager love that's done well, because we've seen that in books where, yeah, they love each other and they can be around each other but still exist as human beings. We've seen that, and then in this book, it was just like gushy, annoying love. And I think that can really detract from the story if the love is too gushy and too cheesy. 'Cause the romance between them, you know, it wasn't a romance book, so it was a subplot, but I just was so annoyed by their annoying love that it kind of just, because there's this series has like 8 books, I guess, but I couldn't get past the first one because I was like, I can't read these two calling each other by the first letter of their names. So all I have to say is just check your recipe and make sure you don't have too much cheese going on, okay? Just cool it on the cheese.
In my research for this episode, I found some really great questions to think about.
Ellen Brock is a novel editor, and she posted these on a blog post a few years ago. But I think that they're really great and awesome to think about when writing love triangles. So the first one is, if you took out telling and all of the sexy, smoochy stuff, would the reader still be able to tell that the characters are in love? Do they demonstrate love without it having to be said? Do they have a clear connection? The second question, are both characters full and complete human beings before they meet each other? Oh my gosh, that's such an important question. I think in life, it's important to be a complete and human being before falling in love with someone else. And so I think it's awesome, and we definitely need to put it in our novels and reinforce that fact that your person shouldn't be made complete when they meet their love interest. They should be their own freaking person. Anyway, do they have value? Do they each have value without being in a relationship? Do they each offer traits of value to each other? Are both characters flawed, both physically and emotionally, psychologically, mentally? Because, you know, we don't want to read books about perfect people. You want to make sure your characters have something going on that is a struggle for them. Duh, right? This one we were just talking about. Does the relationship develop over time rather than the characters falling in insta-love? Now, I think that there can be said some things for insta-love. I think there's some instances when it can work, like Shannon Murphy's novel. A Calling of Darkness is so amazing. It's a Greek mythology retelling, and the love triangle in her book, it was insta-love, but done right. Like, it made sense because the main character, Helena, is the descendant of Hades. And so she has Hades' powers and, like, his soul inside of her. And she meets the descendants of Aphrodite and Persephone, both of whom Hades loved, and she immediately feels something for them because these deep, long-living, you know, immortal souls inside of them are pulling them towards each other. So if your insta-love has a reason for it behind it, I'm all for it. Because, like, when I read that, Shannon, you know, one of her questions for me as a beta reader was, like, is it too insta-love? Do you hate it? And I was like, no, it makes sense because their souls are calling to each other because their souls are these immortal beings who are powerful, who are gods who still love each other. And I was like, I'm all for that insta-love. But, like, in that urban fantasy book I read, they're just teenagers. Like, there's a difference between insta-love and puppy love. Like, write the puppy love that teenagers can relate to, not the I'm gonna die without you Romeo and Juliet love. That's not a, yeah. Nothing against Shakespeare, but, like, come on. We're not gonna die without each other. You can breathe. Live your life. Oh, this is a good question that Ellen Brock brings up. Be honest. Is a misunderstanding the backbone of most of their conflicts, or do they have legitimate, realistic issues? Because I would say that that is one of the most annoying things that happen with a romantic subplot is when one, you know, especially in the love triangle, like, the main character misunderstands something that one of her love interests say, and so then she hates him, and then she goes to the other one, and then, you know, near the end of the book, she figures out that she just, you know, misunderstood something and then goes back to the other love interest. Like, come on, make the conflicts more real about something more important, because if the stakes are just like, oh, she heard what he said wrong or she interpreted his text wrong, like, that's dumb. Perfect. Okay, the best thing that I found when I was doing research for this blog, or was for this episode, was on a blog called Ink and Quill. And let me just find, or Ink and Quills. And Caitlin Hillerich runs this blog, and she's got a novella that you can read. But she posted this amazing, amazing blog post about how to write a love triangle like Jane Austen. And you guys know I love Jane Austen. So if we look at a typical YA love triangle, the girl falls in love with two guys at once. One is this good guy, and the other is a more mysterious guy. They both fight for her at the same time, and she agonizes over which one to choose. Okay, so then Caitlin talks about how in Jane Austen books, the heroine does not fall in love with both men at the same time. She has feelings for only one at a time. In Pride and Prejudice, Elizabeth Bennet crushes on that army guy, Wickham. And then when she learns about how dumb he really is, she's like, okay, never mind. I don't like you anymore. And only after that does her do her feelings begin to develop for Darcy? Which I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, it's not what our day and age would define as a love triangle, I think, but it makes for a more interesting, but it shows some growth with your main character, your heroine. So it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes a little bit more sense. She realizes that this guy was kind of a douchebag and then moves on to the better one. She also talks about how not both men are good options. So in YA love triangles, both love interests can be good options, and so it's just deciding on who she wants to love or who she loves more. Like in the Vampire Diaries, Elena has to choose between Stefan and Damon. While some could argue Damon is not a good option, Stefan is this like perfect boyfriend. He loves her, supports her, you know, wants everything good for her. But Damon also is a good option, just in a different way. He challenges her and makes her better, but that's a typical, you know, love triangle. Both men are good options. But in Jane Austen, one man is the right choice and the other is the wrong choice. But it's up to the heroine to decide who is the right choice based on their character. And I think this is great. She says, basically, Austen encourages readers not to decide on a man with your heart or romantic feelings, but to judge and know his character, which I think is so awesome. Because that's something probably we could all do, or I could at least do, is just, you know, learn more about somebody and decide. And I think our society is so focused on follow your heart and do what your heart says, but it's important to know somebody and know who they are and what they like and what's important to them and their goals are before choosing them. The other part of this is that while one man is meant to be the wrong option, both men might appear good options. So in Pride and Prejudice, Wickham, he appears very charming, handsome. He's this decent man who's in the army, and he seems like a good guy for Elizabeth to fall in love with, right?
But he's actually not. He's this kind of skeezy guy who's been cheating Darcy's family for money. And I think Jane Austen was so brilliant in doing that.
She's very good at creating characters who appear to be good love interests, but based off of, you know, their appearance or whether they're charming or romantic, but the actual good choice, you know, they have qualities like loyalty and devotion and commitment and compassion. In Jane Austen's novel, something that's very different, I feel like, from modern YA love triangles is that the main character is decisive and she doesn't waver back and forth between love triangles, because that's what happens in most all of them. I think it's hard, especially when the main character, you know, wavers back and forth, even like dating one and dating the other, and this happens over like, you know, multiple books. Come on, choose one. Choose neither of them, or choose one.
But I think having your main character not be in love with both of the
love interests at the same time is pretty interesting. It changes the tension, it changes the dynamic of it, especially if, you know, she loves one and figures out maybe that he's not really a good guy and then loves the other. That can, you know, change your story a little bit. And I think that's more like real life. While I've definitely like had crushes on multiple people, I think it is actually really hard to love multiple people at one time. At least love them like the same, which I feel like we see a lot of in YA novels. But yeah, those are my thoughts, my Valentine's Day thoughts for you guys on love triangles. I think that they're so great. I think that a lot of, like, the best shows have a love triangle, and you find the group of people who love that series, like Buffy or The Vampire Diaries, they are on one side or the other. Like, with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the love triangle is Buffy, Spike, and Angel. And you have people who are all Team Spike, or you have people who are all Team Angel. I think sometimes you have people who recognize the good in both, but it's creates such a deeper love as a reader or a viewer of the the story, because it gives you something to be like, to cheer on, to be really connected to. Not that you wouldn't be connected to like the story, but it's just, you get connected to a love triangle in a different way. But yeah. So if you guys have different thoughts on love triangles or different things that you think are overdone, or that if you have read a love triangle that is so well done, please tweet at me at Rose Quinney, Quinny. I'd love to hear it. Next. So,
Shannon Murphy is our guest on the podcast today, and she is going to tell us about her favorite love triangle in this little part coming up next.
Happy Valentine's, everyone. So love triangles. I love a good love triangle, but I hate seeing the love triangles that the one drags the other two along forever, never really leaning towards one side or the other, just basically dragging the two love interests through the mud, and nothing really ever happens of it, and you don't get anything out of that, and I hate that. The other one is when the two love interests don't have any great personalities whatsoever. Like, why would you choose any of them? Both of them are not good options. Maybe you should, you know, make it a love square. One of the worst love triangles I can think of is Twilight. Don't get me wrong, I love them as a young teen, wanting something magical to happen in my life. An example, handsome vampire boyfriend. But the love triangle in this one is bad. First of all, Bella has the personality of chalk. She has no personality whatsoever yet. Edward and Jacob are both infatuated with her. Don't even get me started on Eric that was in there as well. He never really played a part in any of it, but he was also infatuated with her, which blows my mind. Anyways, but the personalities of Jacob and Edward are, they're awful. First of all, Edward is creepily possessive. I mean, I like it when, like, the male love interest is protective, but he's, like, he's possessive and it's creepy. Jacob, and Jacob's just, like, a little boy who's throwing a tantrum when he doesn't, when Bella doesn't choose him. And I hated that. He even threatens to harm himself when, she doesn't choose him. And then she proceeds to kissing him. So it's like, what the hell, Bella? You've already chosen Edward, and now you're kissing Jacob because he says he's going to hurt himself. I can't. Just for the love of God, Bella, please don't choose either of them, and maybe buy yourself a personality while you're trying to figure your shit out. Oh, and may I add, Bella is completely okay with throwing her life away, her humanity away, to be with Edward forever. And there is something really wrong with that, which then is going to lead me into a love triangle that I adore, which is the Elena, Stefan, and Damon from the Vampire Diaries, because Elena doesn't have any desire to be a vampire, to be with Stefan. Which is awesome. She can still just love him, and they can love each other for who they are. Stefan is also, like, clearly the right choice. He is so loving and so caring, and he just wants Elena to be happy. And, like, they're perfect together. But then there's Damon, and Elena and Damon bring out a difference in each other. Damon wants to be, he wants the world to hate him until he gets the love from Elena, which I think is really powerful. And that, again, Elena doesn't want to throw her humanity away for him. Though, spoiler, I think that she was already a vampire at that time. but, like, they challenge each other. They challenge each other to be better. They challenge each other not, not to be afraid of the world, and I adore that. Another love triangle that I just adore is from Pirates of the Caribbean 1 with Elizabeth, Will, and why can't I think of his name right now? Norrington. I mean, Jack's in there too. It's more like a love square. but it is obvious from the start that Elizabeth and Will are into each other, and it's their positions, that she's a governor's daughter and he's a blacksmith, that's keeping each other, like, them away from each other. And I love that in a good love triangle, that there's something actually forcing them not to be together. Like, and like, it's not even that they were being forced not to be together, it's just that it would be like shunned upon. Like, obviously her father was making comments about it too. So then when everything goes down and Will's life is in danger, she agrees to marry Norrington to save his life. And again, I think that's really powerful. She's okay with letting herself not be with him just to save him. And then I loved that when she did choose to be with Will, Norrington didn't throw a tantrum, didn't threaten her in any way, but was like, again, he wanted her to be happy. And I thought that was also really powerful, because clearly he did love her. I mean, I can go on and on forever about the love triangles I love, because I'm a hopeless romantic and that's just what I do. But I'll leave it there and I'll let Rose take the rest of it. Bye guys.
And now we're going to hear me and Shannon Murphy talk. We recorded this interview like months ago, I feel like. And Shannon and I have just like gotten so much closer and have been beta reading for each other. And it's really just amazing how awesome our Twitter community is, because I've just learned so much from everybody and gotten to make some amazing friends. So here is Shannon Murphy. Shannon, you are currently working on A Calling of Darkness, right?
Yes.
Okay, can you tell me what it's about? Because I've read some of your, like, favorite lines from your word sprints on Twitter, and it sounds so good.
So, it's a Greek mythology retelling.
Yes.
Calling the descendant of Hades.
Oh my gosh, I love it. That's awesome. I love retellings of things. I just found this book that's a retelling of Jane Eyre as a serial killer, and I can't get over it. It's so exciting.
That's awesome.
I know. Yeah.
Did you want me to go a little bit more into it?
That would be great, yeah.
Okay. That's why just, like, my first, like, line to tell people.
It's always awkward, I feel like. I always feel awkward when I tell people about my book. Like, oh, yeah, like, totally, I'll tell you about it. And then I'm, like, stumbling over my words, like, I don't know what's important to tell you right now.
Totally. I always, like, try to, like, recap it in my head. I'm like, okay, what is, like, important information that I think people should know? Kind of like a query letter.
I know, and query letters are the worst.
Great.
But yeah, just, like, a little blurb about it is so great.
Sure. Okay. So, my MC is Helena. She was a farmer's daughter that, like, she liked to get into trouble. She liked to sword fight. So she wasn't, what are the best words for her?
She sounds like we would be really good friends.
Yeah, so she was always a little bit of a badass. But but then all of a sudden she has these powers of death, of the same powers that Hades used to have. And she has no control over them. So there's some unfortunate events there, with her.
Yeah.
And then those wrong people get their hands on her, and they use her as a weapon.
Oh, wow.
So she goes from, like, pretty much an innocent farmer's daughter to a monster, is how these people want her to be seen as.
Wow.
Just like Hades was back in the day.
Oh my gosh.
So she goes from farmer's daughter to a weapon, and then she becomes Lady of the Underworld. So she goes through a big transformation. To me, she's really like a story of like perseverance. So she keeps getting knocked down, and it's just a matter of like her getting back up and what she's going to do, and like forgiving herself for what she had to do to survive while being this weapon.
It sounds like when she was like a farmer's daughter that she liked to like take control of her life and like be in control, and so I bet to be taken like captive and used by other people is really hard for her. Like, that sounds like a good struggle for her.
And that's exactly how it was. Like, don't want to give too much away, but like in the beginning it was like her mother wanted her to be like the perfect daughter that would go and like marry in and take over the farm.
Of course.
She was like, I want nothing to do with that. No. Give me a sword.
Can I sword fight now, Mom? Thank you.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
That's a little about her and my whip.
It sounds amazing, first of all. I'm so excited. How long have you been working on it?
So, not very long. I was actually working on another project when I started this one. But that project was an absolute train wreck.
I'm sure it was not, but that's okay.
It totally was. So I think it was in August last year. My MC like came to me in my head.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I need to write her like right now.
I love when that happens.
Yeah, it was awesome because I've never had that with a character before. Like, my other characters I loved, but I didn't have the same passion for them as I did with her.
Yeah.
And she came to me and it was so clear what I wanted to write her as. So I started, like, I put that other train wreck aside, and I was like, okay, I'm on her and her story. So I started in, basically, after I was done outlining, I started in September of this year.
That's awesome. Of last year, because it's 2018 now.
I guess so.
Crazy.
God. Yes, September of last year.
Do you try and write every day? Like, how far along are you in the, you know, work in progress?
So, I did.
Did you do? Yeah, you did NaNoWriMo?
Yeah, it was an epic fail.
Oh, was it?
actually, you know what? I shouldn't say that because I'm really proud of myself for what I did. The first week of November, I was actually on holidays. I was in Mexico, so
trying to write
ridiculous. I didn't get anything done. And then I ended up finishing the first rough draft in, like, the last week of November.
Wow.
So, I think I did 35,000 words in NaNo.
That's awesome.
It was great because the 2 months prior that I was writing, I didn't get close to that amount. I think I wrote 30 in those 2 months combined.
Oh, wow. So that was a good month for you. That was a win.
Yeah, I'm proud of myself.
Yeah. NaNo is so hard. I was on vacation the first week too, and I was like, I'm gonna write every day, it'll be fine, like, I'm on vacation, I'm visiting my family, but I'll write. And of course I did not, so I was so behind.
Oh yeah, no, me too. And then, like, when I finished the rough draft, I didn't want to get back into it right away.
Yeah,
I'm like, I should let it set for a day.
Oh yeah, yeah.
At least a couple days. I didn't
just one day and then jump back in.
That's basically how it went, because I think I was just so excited that day that I finished it. I was so proud of myself that I was like, I'm gonna make an epic. And then, yeah, I didn't end up writing any more that day, but it was, like, the next day after. I'm like, okay, I have to edit this.
And I do that, too. I always am, like, I really tell myself, I'm like, I need to take a couple weeks off and just, like, read other books and, like, relax. And then I'm like, no, I have all these ideas of how to make it better, and I'm going to go back and get started right now.
Exactly. So I'm about halfway through the editing process.
Cool.
So I find out the editing is taking a lot longer than actually writing the first draft.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's super hard.
I'm trying to be done for February, because that's when I told my beta readers I was going to be ready. I should be ready for them, so.
Can you please add me to that list, because I cannot wait to read it.
You bet.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you for all.
Yes, it sounds so amazing. I feel like editing takes way longer than writing. And, like, writing the, you know, the first draft. And I have my a dystopian novel that I wrote in 2016 for NaNoWriMo. And I just finished going back through and doing some more revisions. And but I just, like, can't stop myself. That's where I have to learn is, like, at a certain point, I just need to say, no, it's good the way it is, and I can stop making changes to it. But I always have these ideas in my head.
Totally. And then you're always going to be constantly having new ideas.
Oh, yeah.
For it, right? So it's like you have to have that perfect time to know when to stop.
Ugh, it's so hard.
Or you can way over edit it, and then it's like.
And then it's a completely different book. It's like, oh, this book is nothing like what I started with.
Totally. You're like, who are my characters? What is happening?
Yep. No, it's fine. What have you. So it was. Before a Calling of Darkness and the train wreck you started before it, was that the like the first thing you had, you know, novel you had tried to write?
In a way, when I was younger, I used to write stories for my little sister.
Ooh, fun.
So I wrote a story about, like, a fearsome female pirate and then also one about an assassin.
Yes. I love
it. So I somehow kept those ideas. I don't know how.
Yeah.
I have them to this day in the file on my computer.
Your main characters, like, sound like such badasses, and I love it.
I've always been, like, drawn to, like, badass female characters.
Yeah. We need more of those out there.
Exactly. So I was like, I'm just going to keep writing about them because they seem to be my thing.
I love it. Love it. That's awesome.
I think, like, the first, like, serious one is definitely A Calling of Darkness. I learned a lot from the one I call my train wreck. but this is definitely my more serious one. This is the one, like, I want to get published or something.
Yeah.
I want people to read it because I want people to be in love with Helena like I am.
Oh, for sure they are going to be because I already love her a little bit.
It's
fine.
Awesome.
Well, I have a train wreck too. So before I wrote This Dead World, I worked on a novel for like 3 years. I wrote it and just like got into that cycle of just constantly editing it. And I just hated it by the end, you know? I was like, this book is the worst and I hate my characters and nothing makes sense. But it's like I went back through and just like read through it. And I think that I'm so torn about it because I really think the idea of the story is really good, but I just, like, still have this, like, anger towards the book. I'm like, no, it can never be good. I hate it. And it's like, but I'm trying to take, like, what I did in that book and learn from it because I kind of used a lot of the themes in that book in my NaNo novel this year. So it's like, it's clearly my brain is, like, trying to work out that story just, like, in a different way.
Totally. And that's how I feel about mine, too. Like, it was just, like, it was my first one, so I honestly had no idea what I was doing.
Oh, I know. Me too.
I was like, I have these ideas in my head that I actually originally wanted to make into, like, a manga, like a Japanese animation comic.
Oh, cool.
That was my first, like, love. Like, I always wanted to tell stories, but through pictures, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I have this story in my head. I do not have the time or the talent to draw anymore. Like, I just kind of let it slide after high school. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to start writing them down. And I did. And I kept writing and, you know, started forming sentences and, like, chapters. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm going somewhere with this. And then I was like, it just, like, I kept editing it because I had no idea what I was doing. Add chapters that made no sense. I added, like, background characters that made no sense. I was like, oh, my Lord. So I still love the idea. It's been with me for a long time, and I will go back to it.
Yeah.
But right now, that's not where my heart's at.
Right. And that's totally how I feel about my train wreck too. But then I went to a writing conference, and I was like, this will be, like, fun, and I'll meet other writers, but, like, it'll just be cool to hear, like, from agents, but, like, I doubt I'll, like, learn anything amazing. But it was just cool, and, like, it actually helped me so much to just truly remember, like, oh, this is how a story is supposed to work, and this is how scenes are supposed to be set up, and they're supposed to help move your plot forward. I was like, oh, okay, I feel like I know everything I did wrong in my train wreck now. And And then when I wrote This Dead World, I was like, okay, yeah, I learned something from that. You know, yeah. I always just was like, I've written since I was a little kid, and I'm just like, I'm a natural at it. I don't need to, like, actually know how to do it. But it really helped to be like, oh, this is how the popular story structure works, and it works for a reason.
Totally. Yeah, I totally get that. I'm the same way. I didn't go to a writing conference. Have you heard Jenna Maresi before?
No.
Okay, so she is, like, a self-published author, but she's also a YouTuber.
Ooh.
Oh, my gosh. She is amazing. Like I've learned so much just from watching her videos and, like, how a book should be like. Yeah. I was like, oh, my gosh, yeah. Like, I got this now.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to have to send me her name so that I can watch that, because that sounds great. Oh, my gosh. So... are you a pantser or a planner?
Okay, so this is where Jenna Maresi comes back in.
Okay, tell me about it. Tell me about it.
My first novel was completely pantsed, right? Like, I just had that story rolling around in my head, and mm-hmm. I just started writing. And writing nonsense, apparently. so when I got the idea for A Calling of Darkness, I was like, something has to be different here. I was like... I pantsed the last one. It did not work for me. I was like, okay. So I did, like, a tweet on Twitter, and I was like, people, I am a pantser in need of, like, planning tips. and then I got the name of Jenna Maresi, and to check out her, like, outlining. And oh my gosh, it was amazing. Like, I was a madman outlining this thing. It only took me 2 days.
Oh, wow. But, like,
I did not stop for those 2 days. I planned out every single detail on, like, different colored sticky notes for different things, like pink ones for when it was a love interest, red when there was bloodshed. Like, it was just like, I had it all planned out, every single detail.
That's awesome.
And then, and then while I was writing, I ended up only using half the outline.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and... like, the ending that I had planned for was nothing like how it ended.
So it just kind of, like, evolved as you were actually writing it?
Yeah, exactly. So, I like, the things I thought I knew I wanted my characters to be, they... and as I, like, learned more about them, because yeah. really, I had only had the idea rolling around my head for maybe a week or two.
Yeah.
Before all, like, this outlining and planning, is that, like, I learned more about them. I learned who I wanted them to truly be. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the story kind of started writing itself in a way.
Oh, for sure.
So I am a combination of the two. I'm a plotzer, if you will.
Ooh, I like that. A plotzer. I feel like people think, like, look at me like I'm crazy when I tell them that because I with my train wreck, I planned it out hardcore, just like, you know, you did for A Calling of Darkness. But I feel like it hurt me in a way, and I loved pantsing This Dead World, because I found that out too. I had this basic idea in my head, but then I figured out who my characters were as I was writing them. And I feel like some people look at me like I'm a kook, like, you don't, like, you create the characters, like, you already know who they are. But I'm like, no, you really don't. Like, the story writes itself. Like, I would just sit down every day and words would just come out of me that I'd be like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that was gonna happen. And I love, and I do, my book this year was crime fiction. So I did a little bit, I would say that I did a plotzer method for that, because I had to, you know, try and piece things together and figure things out that made sense. But it's so interesting how it works differently for every single author, because we all do it so different, but sometimes planning scares me.
Totally. And, like, everyone has their own way of doing things. Like, there are some excellent authors out there that are 100% plotters or pantsers.
Yes.
And, like, I was like, I don't know how you do it and keep the story straight, but oh my gosh, you're amazing. So, like, everyone just has their own way, and there's no wrong way or right way. And some people will fight that, but there's really not. It's just whatever works best for you.
Right. Because, like, even if you plan it or you pants it, you go back and you edit it and you make changes. So however you finish your first draft, I don't really feel like it. If it works for you, that's what's important.
Totally. I totally agree.
Do you plan, so I know you're in the process of editing and going to have beta readers read A Calling of Darkness, but are you going to, for right now, are you planning on getting it traditionally published or self? Are you going to try and self-publish?
That's actually one of my, like, biggest, like, internal struggles.
Oh, right, yeah. Now. I'm with
because
you there.
I don't know which way to go.
I don't either. I've, like, talked to some, I've had some really awesome authors on my podcast who have self-published and are successful at it, and like, I don't know if I could do it.
Totally, like, it is a full-time job. Not only do you have to write the book, edit the book, get editors, get beta readers, and then like all the publishing that goes along with it. You have to market yourself, you have to get it published yourself. It's like, how do people that have like daily jobs and then also have this and then also have a life outside of it is like, I know, astonishing.
Well, like Erin McDermott, who was my first guest on my podcast, she even went on like a book tour and she's self-published. I'm like, what? How?
That,
like,
is awesome.
It's so awesome and it makes me so like in awe of her. But that's the thing I struggle with too, because I love This Dead World and I want people to read it, but I also like, I don't know. I've always dreamed of being traditionally published, and I know that being self-published is still successful and there are great things to it, but part of me is like, I don't really want to do it. I want it to be traditionally published.
Totally. So that's my struggle right now is like, I want to see A Calling of Darkness sitting on a bookshelf next to Sarah J. Maas's novels, right? Like, I want to be part of that, but it's also, like, I'm super creative, super artsy. So it's like, when you self-publish, you also get more of that creativity. You can design your own covers. Like, that to me is just, that would be so much fun. But I also want to start writing the second novel for A Calling of Darkness,
right,
and not necessarily spending all my time
marketing
trying to
market. Yeah. Oh, the always never-ending internal struggle. And I feel like just trying I know you haven't started this process, and it's terrible, so I just want to give you a big hug when you do start querying. But it's hard, and it's like, it can be really disheartening, even though there are so many agents, and there are so many books, and it's a very, you know, competitive market. It can be really disheartening when you're like, I love this book, and my characters are great, and the world needs to read them, and all these agents are like, no.
Yeah. No, totally. I'm preparing myself for that. I started writing my query letter actually yesterday.
Ooh.
So I think what I'm going to do, because there's, to me, like, I am still super new to the industry. I've only been writing since last August.
Yeah.
2016. So, like, I'm still super new to it, and I'm still trying to learn it all. But I feel like I'd probably start querying and then try to educate myself more on how I can traditionally self-publish.
Have you heard of the Query Shark?
It sounds familiar.
It is a blog by Janet Reed. She's a literary agent, and she takes people send, and she's been doing it since like 2012 or something. But she takes people's queries and she gives them feedback of like, this is how a literary agent reads what you're writing and when we stop reading and why we say no. And she has, you know, like 5 years or 3 years or something of backlog that if you email her, she'll send it to you. So that's what I did before I started reading or writing my query letter, because there is a formula to it and there's a certain way you need to do it. And she is really good at like trimming things down and just being super blunt about like, this doesn't work, this does work. So I would recommend looking that up and getting that from her, because it's really helpful, especially from someone in the industry who reads hundreds of query letters every day.
Totally. And like you're saying, it's such a hard industry to get into, because they're like, there's so many great writers out there.
Yeah.
And there's so many literary agents, but it's it's hard to get into. It's hard to get the right person to notice you too, exactly. Right?
I just feel like sometimes it's like a game of chance. Like, am I sending this email to the right person on the right day when they're in the right mood to be interested in my story? I don't know.
Right? Exactly. For me, like, there's a lot of, like, dark topics in my book. So I also feel like some, like, literary agents that are looking for a young adult are, like, they might.
I feel like those were, like, the best books that I read when I was a teenager, though.
Right?
Were, like, yes. Were ones that had dark aspects to them. And maybe that just says something about me as a person, but those were all the books that I love to read.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm the same way. So it's, like, I look at, like, manuscript wish list or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm, like, trying to see which ones would be okay with, like, a little bit, like, dark.
Yes.
In their yeah novels. But it's, yeah, it's hard. It's all about finding that right person at the right time. For and sure. It's not going to happen for everyone.
But let's be real. Teenagers love that crap because they're so moody. And to have someone, like, a teenager's life be so, like, life and death and dark, I feel like, is relatable when you're an emotional teenager.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I think that's why I liked reading those dark books. Yes. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, my life isn't too bad here.
Right, it kind of made me feel better. I was like, okay, I guess I'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh, I love it. So what is your favorite book that you've read recently or right now or that you're excited to read?
Oh my gosh, so my to read list is long. It's very long.
Oh, I'm with you.
I have not time to read at all.
I know. It's such a struggle.
Oh my gosh. So I read A Court of Thorns and Roses this summer.
Okay. What's that about? I've never heard of it.
The series? Oh my gosh. It is amazing. I am absolutely in love with it. But if you're into the darker young adult novels, I suggest that one.
Okay, it was A Court of what?
Thorns and Roses.
Court of Thorns and Roses. Okay, perfect. Putting it on my list.
Put it on to your to read?
Yes.
So right now I'm reading Kay Dowling's Tide.
I saw that on your Twitter. I haven't read it yet, but it's on my list too.
Oh my gosh, so that is what I'm currently reading, and, like, I was, because I wrote a book when I was a kid about, like, that my fearsome female pirate, so
oh,
I was,
yes.
Like, as soon as I heard about her book, I was like, I know I'm gonna love it.
Oh, yeah.
And I do. It is so good. I have, like, a fictional crush on someone I probably shouldn't, and I'm, like, so into it. I'm like, okay, no, I need to edit, but I need to read. I need to know more.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm moving that up on my list. It's been on my list since, you know, I've connected with her on Twitter, but I love hearing that.
Oh my gosh, yeah, no, it's so good. And, like, right now I think she's working on the third one.
Yeah,
and
she I'm is.
So she, like, is, like, giving, like, hints. I'm like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I was like, I need it right now. I need it all.
She's the sweetest. I love her.
She is.
Oh my gosh, that's so great. Well, I have so many that I do Kindle Unlimited, and there's so many good ones on there. I, like, blow through crime fiction books so quick, so I love to know about books that are in a different genre than just crime fiction, because that's a lot of murder for my brain.
I mean, mine's a lot of crime fiction, but, you know, a lot of murder.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, murder all around is a good thing. I just, like, am fascinated by that sort of stuff. Which also might say something about me as a person, but that's fine.
It was funny the other day. We were talking. I think I had posted something, and someone was talking, was saying, like, I hope it's, like, super dark. I'm like, oh, yeah. No, like, I'm afraid for my mother to read it because she might judge my morals.
Yep. Then that's perfect. It's, like, the perfect amount of dark if you're afraid of your mother reading it.
I was like, maybe I'll just keep this one from her for now.
It's like, Mom, you wouldn't even like it. It's, you know, not your style. Just tell her that.
Yeah, there you go. She's more, like, crime fiction, too. So, you know.
Yeah.
She might like it, actually.
I'm sure she'll love it because you wrote it and mother's love and everything, you know?
Oh, totally. She'll tell me it's good, even though she thinks it's awful.
Which sometimes it's like, I have my brother read my, like, works in progress as I go, just because it's nice to have feedback as you, you know, go along and start writing a book, and you're like, well, I hope it's not terrible, so someone might want to tell me before I finish it. But he is the kind of person where he's real honest. Like, he's sometimes been like, this is real bad. So I appreciate the honesty, you know?
Oh, totally. No, same here. I actually haven't let anyone read it except for, like, a couple people that I let read the first chapter. I was like, if you hate it, tell me, but can we still be friends?
But, like, it's so funny because it can be so nerve-wracking. Like, I feel sometimes really insecure over my writing, even though that's why we do it, to, like, have other people read it. But it can be really, right, really nerve-wracking, because I feel like a lot of the time, I mean, at least in my novel, sometimes my characters, are, you know, like, they have little pieces of me in them, so that if someone doesn't like them, I'm like, well, you don't like me.
Yeah, right? And then it's also like, are they going to judge me for how I, like, write things? Are they going to judge my character now? Or, like, yeah, no, I'm always, like, super, super self-conscious about that. And I've always been that way with any kind of art that I've had, that I've never wanted to share with anyone.
Yeah.
Not because I didn't like the criticism, but it's because, like, I didn't want people not to like me.
Well, you have to be very vulnerable to
totally
share that stuff with people, and that's kind of scary.
Very scary. So I'm taking a huge step out of my comfort zone, and I'm sending it to people for beta readers, so...
I would really like you to send me the first chapter, because I am a little bit, I feel like I have a girl crush on your main character. She sounds amazing.
I can send it your way.
Okay, perfect. So the topic that I talked about today was getting past writer's block. And I don't know if you have struggled with that when you were writing A Calling of Darkness, but how do you get past, you know, just like being stuck?
Oh my gosh. Writer's block is huge for me, because I feel like some days, like, the words are just, like, flowing. Like,
oh, yeah.
Because I'm usually writing a scene that has, like, lots of action, or is part with my romantic subplot. So, like, the things that are really interesting and that really pull me into the story, I have no problems writing them. It's, like, the in-between scenes, the things that you need to have to, you know, let the story flow.
But sometimes you're just like, I don't want to write this.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. I'm actually working on a chapter right now that is a complete rewrite from because it was one of my first NaNoWriMo chapters, and it's awful. I don't even know what I was thinking. It's even in, like, a different point of view. It's not even from my MC, so I was like, why did I write?
You're like, what was I thinking?
Right? Like, I understand, like, my thought process on it. It might be cool to, like, have this person meet her and, like, their thoughts on her, but I was like, oh my gosh, so I'm rewriting that one. But actually, I think it was chapter 8. Oh my gosh, I hate chapter 8.
Why do you hate chapter 8?
Because I wrote it, and it was during, like, a writer's block, so I was like, okay, like, I know this is crap right now, but I need to just get the words out, because it's better to have words on the page than nothing at all.
For sure.
So I pushed through it, and I even wrote a note on the top of the chapter, like, this is crap, rewrite it.
I love those notes. I have some of those.
Right. So I went back to it, and I was like, oh my gosh, I wasn't kidding. This is awful. So I was rewriting it. And it took me a week and a half to rewrite it.
Oh my gosh.
And it's super strange, because it was an action scene. It also had, like, my romantic subplot in it. And it was, like, it was everything that usually attracts me to write my story. And it was just, like, I hate it.
Yeah.
It was awful. So, like, every time I went to go sit down to write it, it was, like, a big process for me. I'm like, okay, I gotta do this. I gotta push through it again. And I just got distracted, and I would procrastinate, and I would do anything but write. So how I got through that was, I think we all have, like, these songs or even, like, movies that inspire us.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was like, okay, I have to watch something, I have to listen to something, I have to read something. I need something to just completely take my mind on how awful this chapter is and how much I don't want to write it. So that's actually when I started really reading The Changing Tide. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is just so amazing. And it almost inspired me to just keep writing this chapter. And I actually reread it the other day. Because I edited it like a couple weeks ago now. And I was like, oh, do you want this actually isn't half bad.
That's awesome.
So I just needed like a kick in the butt. I just needed to take a break, just a couple days break, and like just remind myself why I love creating. And that inspired me. So I also watched, I channel a lot of like Harley Quinn in my MC.
Perfect.
So I also watched Suicide Squad as well while trying to write this scene.
I love it. I've done that where I like, I had a really big action, like gunfight scene in one of my, in This Dead World. And to like get myself prepared for it, I watched 13 Hours with John Krasinski because he's beautiful, first of all. And it was so, it's such a good movie that I was like, I need to get myself like in this action mode where everyone's dying. And it really helped.
It totally does. I think like, and I think sometimes like when we're in those writer's block, we just need to like take a step back and just remember why we're doing it in the first place and why we love it.
I think that sometimes writer's block is like our brain being like, okay, I'm real tired. You need to give me a little bit of a break. It's not so much that, you know, like your story is bad or whatever. It's like sometimes your brain just needs a refresh, like a little reset button to just then come back with a fresh idea.
Totally. No, I totally agree with that. And like when you step back from it from like a bit, like I know for me, like I'll be walking to the bus stop and I'll be like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I just figured out why this chapter sucks.
Yes.
And why it's so hard to read and how I can make it better. So just taking that break and allowing your brain to wander and ponder it too. So
I love those moments. I had one when I was writing my nano novel where I was just walking to work and then I was like, oh, all these pieces just like came together in my head and I was like, I've figured it out. I was like, now I know how it all needs to come together.
Oh my gosh, yes. I'm notorious for like thinking like these aha moments come to me while I'm driving.
Oh.
And thank goodness I don't do that very much anymore, because like it was like I'd be driving to work and I'd be like, oh my god. Like the middle of like driving, I'm like, I need to concentrate on this right now.
Like I need to pull over and write this down.
Right? And I would do that. And I would like, okay, I'm like, if I don't pull over now, I'm not gonna remember this when I actually stop. So I'd pull over and I'm like, thank goodness I just take the bus. So when I think of something like that I just need to write down, I can do it.
Yeah, that's when my downfall with some good ideas is being like, oh no, I'm gonna remember this, it's so good, it's not going anywhere. And then 20 minutes later I'm like, what was I gonna do?
Oh my god, falling asleep with having like the idea in your head.
Don't right do it before. Ugh, that's the worst.
I've started just getting out of bed.
Yeah,
I'll just leave.
Yep. Nope, sorry.
Gotta
work on this.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because inspiration doesn't come like when you want it to come. It just happens, and you gotta kind of work with when it happens.
Totally. That's exactly how you have to do it.
Yes. So this has been so awesome. I have just one last question for you, but what is your favorite part about writing?
I think my favorite part is like I've always been very creative, so like creating these stories and creating these worlds and creating these characters is just is to me is the best part. Like I love bringing them to life.
Yeah.
And then also like the profound lines that you don't expect to come from you and you write them down, you're like, holy crap,
yeah,
I just wrote that. I'm actually not bad at this writer thing.
You've had some really good lines lately. I've read them and I'm like, damn, girl, that's so good.
Thank you. Yes, I tend to share all my favorite lines on Twitter because I'm like, I'm so excited that I actually wrote this.
Yes, it's good. It's good to be excited about those. Well, perfect. Isn't Shannon just amazing? I think that I have, since that interview, I got to beta read her novel, A Calling of Darkness, and it's straight up amazing. Can't wait for it to be published and to have her sign a copy for me. It's going to be so great. But thank you, Shannon, for being on the podcast with me. And everyone go follow her on Twitter. She's at Shannon with two N's in the middle, KJ Murphy. And on Instagram, she's at SK Murphy Writer. So make sure to go follow her. She has a book giveaway open right now. Oh, until March 7th, I think. So go enter that because you definitely want to follow her and to win anything she's giving away because she's the bestest in the world. I also have an ARC giveaway. I'm giving away 3 ARCs just because I've been so lucky to talk to so many amazing authors. I'm giving away Burrow Hills by Julia Lynn Rubin, Dive Smack by Dimitra Brodsky, which I've talked to you guys about before and is so good. And I'm giving away my personal signed copy because I want someone else to read it and for more people to know about it. And also because she's going to give me a copy when it comes out, or I'm going to buy it. I'm just going to get my hands on it another way. And the other book I'm giving away is The Art of Escaping by Erin Callahan, which is amazing. And I got my hands on some ARCs from her publisher. So I'm just trying to spread the love, you know. I feel so lucky to be able to read books before they come out, which is like a dream come true that I want everybody else to get to experience that as well. So make sure to go follow. You enter that on Twitter by retweeting the tweet and following me at Rose Quinney, and that's Quinny. This has been episode 8. Again, I always appreciate and love it when you guys leave me feedback on iTunes. Just give me a quick rating. You can leave a review, but it definitely helps. And if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Instagram or Twitter at rosequinny.com. Thanks so much, you guys. See you in a couple weeks.